I'm not a trained math teacher. I mean, I've been doing it for 25 years. It is on the job training, but I grew up the daughter of two English teachers. I was an English teacher first, and I'm totally comfortable there. I can tell you exactly what kids need to know and how to know it. Math, I feel a little less confident inventing for myself. Although
it'll feel frustrating and overwhelming, and you'll feel like you're forced to go back to the drawing board when your curriculum resource is pulled away from you. What do we consider when trying to select a new curriculum resource? What's that look like? Are we supposed to create our own resources from scratch when those resources are plucked from our grasp? As educators, we are constantly facing the challenge of adapting our teaching methods to improve student understanding and engagement. This often involves exploring new pedagogies such as problem-based learning and selecting the right curriculum resources that align with our goals. In this episode, we speak with longtime friend of the show, Katrianne Vance, a middle school math teacher in Virginia. Katrianne is trying to decide how to transition to a new curriculum resource and is feeling overwhelmed with the workload ahead. Stick around and you'll hear how together we can make plans for her next steps.
Welcome to the Making Math Moments That Matter podcast. I'm Kyle Pierce.
And I'm John Orr. We are from MakeMathMoments.com.
This is the only podcast that coaches you through a six-step plan to grow your mathematics program, whether at the classroom level or at the district level.
And we do that by helping you cultivate and foster your mathematics program like strong, healthy, and balanced tree. So if you master the six parts of an effective math program, the impact that you are going to be doing will grow and reach far and wide.
Every week, you're going to get the insight you need to stop feeling overwhelmed, gain back your confidence, and get back to enjoying the planning and facilitating of your mathematics program for the students or the educators that you serve.
All right. Hey, we are back with another episode with Katrianne Vance. Katrianne, it's been forever. It's been forever. I think we had you on like our very first 10 episodes back in the early, early days of the podcast. This is going to be, I think, episode 280-something, I don't even know. We'll figure that out later. But I think we had you back for kind of a recap, not maybe a year later than that, but that's still years ago. So fill us in. We're excited to talk and catch up. Fill us in. Are you still in the same place? You're still teaching the same things? Give us a small little update, and then we'll dig on a pebble that's kind of rattling around in your shoe.
All right. Well, congratulations to you two for being, I don't know, close to 300 episodes, because it was episode 8 and it was episode 72. I went and looked back to see, and that feels like a very long time ago. But I was reading the transcript and it's a lot of the same questions. So it's like, what? I haven't figured anything out since then. But I am still at the same school. I teach at North Branch School in Afton, Virginia, center of Virginia. And it's a tiny little preschool through eighth grade, and I teach the seventh and eighth graders. And it's so small that if they discover you can do it, you're going to end up teaching it. So I had been teaching history, English, math, and music. And I just this year, I'm not teaching history for the first time in about 25 years. So now I'm narrowed it down to English, math, and music.
There you go. Did you just pretend that you can't teach history anymore, right? And that like worked for you, right?
No.
I forgot the history.
Found somebody better. So it's been actually really exciting to watch her take over the history.
That's awesome. Well, we so appreciate you coming back. And like so many, we have this conversation with so many listeners. We will meet people in person at conferences, or we'll have some people reach out with some questions through, say, email. Then we encourage a math mentoring moment episode, much like this one. And a lot of people assume it's like theirs isn't a creative enough pebble. And we're like, that is not what this is about, because the reality is we wouldn't have made it into, it's going to be episode 283, John, for this episode. We wouldn't have made it this far if this was an easy problem. And if talking about a pebble one time meant it was forever gone. A lot of this takes time. It takes iterating, it takes reflecting, and then it takes bringing it back up to the conversation in order to have that conversation with others and kind of work through it, because everything is so nuanced. So I'm wondering, before we dig into a pebble, I'm wondering what would be a quick win for you? It might be that you're not teaching history anymore. I don't know. Or maybe there's another quick win that you might want to share with the math community before we dig in here and start rattling that pebble around.
Well, I would say a huge win is that, again, very small school. So there's one teacher who teaches third and fourth, one teacher who does fifth and sixth. I do seventh and eighth for math. We are all completely aligned with the whole sort of problem-based learning and using resources that are having the kids, that are sparking curiosity and having the kids investigate and hands-on learning. And all, we are fully in sync with that. So that's really exciting. I don't have to fight anybody. What we think is the most effective way to have the kids really own the math and understand it, you know, at a deeper level than just memorizing it.
Yeah, that's a huge win, because I think, I know that you went through some of the kind of convincing or the, hey, let's try this. And not everyone is doing the exact same thing. And I think we've still got teachers, almost, I think all teachers who are trying to go through this and teach their students in these ways are battling, are always kind of having that battle of trying to convince someone else that this is a really great way, you should try it too, or defending that this is the right way or the way that works best for my students or the way that works best for the students that are sitting in front of us and what we do every single day. So that's awesome win for you. Now, fill us in. What's been, since last episode 72, what are some epiphanies, revelations, new thinking that you've had since way back, since we last chatted? And then we'll get into the pebbles.
I think I've gotten better at really inquisitive, curiosity-based approach and have found some really good resources, which is where my pebble is going to spring from. Somebody somewhere, it might have been Pam Harris, mentioned the Connected Mathematics Project out of Michigan State. That's what I've been using as a curriculum for the past couple of years. And so just discovering, finding those resources has been really helpful. And that's also the source of my problem, because that resource, which had been free, is now getting published and being official, and it's going to start costing money. And so it had been sort of the perfect scenario where it was online and it was free and I could adjust it as much as I wanted. And now it's going to be a published book. And so I'm just was so curious to hear what is out there that I don't know about, what kinds of programs and curricula and resources for really good problems, because I am not, as you heard, I'm not a trained math teacher. I mean, I've been doing it for 25 years. It is on the job training, but I grew up the daughter of two English teachers. I was an English teacher first, and I'm totally comfortable there. I can tell you exactly what kids need to know and how to know it. Math, I feel a little less confident inventing for myself, although I've done a lot of that too. So I would love someone to hand me the perfect curriculum.
This is a great pebble, because it sounds like you're saying, I would love for someone to do all the thinking for me. I don't want to think anymore. And it's like, Right. Guess who says that in our classrooms, right? It's like the kids are like, hey, just tell me how to do it because I don't want to think anymore. And then Katrianne Vance is like, no, I want you to think. I'm going to put you through these activities and these ideas because I need you to think. And then here we are, teachers going, I don't want to think anymore.
Right. Someone just tell me, but someone tell me what to do, but I also know exactly what I want it to look like. So,
right. I love this. First off, we can end the episode now and say the perfect resource doesn't exist, but yeah. we're not going to do that, because what we are going to do, though, is I think this is going to be a really interesting episode, especially for those who may have been longtime listeners, first time callers, coming and basically trying to think of, like, what does this even look like? Are we all talking about the same thing? When we talk about problem-based learning, or we talk about different types of lesson styles, what does it look like in Katrianne's class? What does it look like in John's class? What does it look like in different classrooms? So before we go down, we'll call it like resource lane here, and talk about some of the different tools that could be out there to potentially help you along this journey, I would love for you to help articulate for those who have not used Connected Mathematics Project from Michigan State. Describe what it is that you're liking about it, maybe some of those features and benefits, and that might help us to kind of frame what that looks like and sounds like. And then we can sort of discuss some of the other options that might be out there that may help But again, as John said, we're going to make sure that everyone's doing some thinking along the way as well.
The biggest idea I would say about the CMP is that everything is in context. There's never just a naked problem where you're just, if you're going to learn the distributive property, it's going to be cut. It will have come out of some kind of context. And I have seen the difference that that's made in terms of understanding something like slope, that slope is rate of change, is unit rate, is, you know, scale factor, that all of those things build on each other. And my students are so comfortable with it before they've necessarily learned an official word for it, or, you know, y equals mx plus b or whatever. And then the same thing with, we just finished quadratic function, so that one is on my mind, that it's all out of a context. There's a reason that you're thinking about rectangles with a fixed area. And when you graph them, it's like, oh, lo and behold, it makes this shape, and it makes it every time. And then can we figure out from the equation, can we start to see things that are consistent in the graph and like that? So it just builds so organically that they're never memorizing something. They just see it so often and build for themselves the connections that y equals mx plus b or ax squared plus bx plus c means something to them once that label is finally given. And it's that the thing you guys said right from the beginning of holding off, holding off, holding off, and then saying, oh, by the way, the thing you just did looks like this when, you know, in an official math book, or can be called this. Yeah. And it's been really successful for my kids in terms of their genuine understanding and then being able to apply it to different kinds of problems.
Right. So is the real struggle that this is a great curriculum that you want to use and now we have to pay for it? And it's like, what can I do instead?
Right.
She's like, so John, do you have a coupon code for this curriculum?
The question is it, because there are so many resources that are free online now as well. I never know if it's illustrative or illustrative math that can get that on. I can get that for free. And the other thing is when they publish it, I've seen samples of the new textbook and there's a lot of text on each page. And when it was online, I went through and changed all of that, you know, put space for my kids to work and separated it out and did some of that stuff that you guys always talked about with the textbook. Take this problem, but get rid of all of that stuff. So not being able to do that anymore makes me nervous as well.
It's nervous because it's like, that was a lot of work to go through that. Is that why it makes you like, I don't have time to kind of do that again with some more resources or this grade level? Is that what's making you nervous? Or is it like, I have to go through all that thinking again? It's overwhelming. Where's the nervousness coming from?
The nervousness comes from, if I spend the money on this curriculum and then I don't have that ease of manipulation because it's a printed book, is it still going to be as good? And then if not that, then what?
Now, I'm curious, we've never actually utilized this particular resource you're referencing. So it sounds like it's fully online and you've been logging in order to access it. And then anything you modify sort of in this, we'll call it like online chamber account thing that now will have a cost in order to get behind the paywall? Or have you been downloading this stuff? What does that look like? And then I guess when now that has a cost to it, what is costing something? And then is there any, we'll call it residue left, meaning do you have any of that stuff that you're using? Or did they say sort of like, sorry, you're not allowed to use it anymore and you're respecting the actual licensing agreement? What does that look like? Because I'm picturing most teachers out there. We know you teachers out there. You like to collect resources and, you know, you get online with something and you're like, I'm going to download it all and I'm going to have it on my hard drive and I have it so I never lose it. What does it look like from a user experience? And then I guess what's now changing about that user experience once this paywall comes up? Is it like students are logging in too and now it's not interactive? What's going on there? And then I guess to that end is like, is there anything from this learning that you've done and resource that you'll still be able to leverage into the future instead of, say, abandoning everything?
These are good questions. So one thing to know about me is I'm married to a patent attorney. So all of that, right? that intellectual property stuff, all the rules. Yeah. So Fair Use Act. I know I can use something in my classroom, but.
Do you have a license to have that curtain in the background up on this video right now on YouTube? You know, be careful. Exactly. Yeah.
Don't sing any songs. Yeah.
Right.
I've been field testing. So I've been a part of a group of field testing this curriculum, which gives me access to it both as a PDF and as an editable doc. And I think there are people who do it fully online with their kids. That's not me. I actually print out each unit and it's in a notebook that the kids have unit by, and then we take out that unit and we put in the new one. And that's just been important for me to sort of the pencil and paper thing, especially when it comes to graphing and that sort of thing has been important. So that's what my intention was, if I use this curriculum, was to order the books. So one change is these are not consumables. So it would be a book and then the kids working in a different place. And I'm sure there's teachers out there going, who cares? But for me, having the work next to the question has been important in a sense of letting the kids connect what they're doing. It's, I don't know, just one of those accommodations that I make of just trying to make it as foolproof as possible is let me not have another thing that you could lose and lose all of your work. So I think I will have access. I know I'll have access to teacher things digitally. I think I could have access to kid things digitally, but I've been wanting that hard copy. They all have different price levels too. So,
right. Now, even when you have access to this, have you been supplementing along the way?
Some like Desmos activities that are just a nice break and a way to sort of see things in a different way. Absolutely. And once in a while, I have just a tried and true thing that I love to do that I will throw in there and be like, oh, good, it's time for the pumpkin, the rubber bands and pumpkins. That always has to happen around Halloween. So that that gets in there. So definitely there'll be some activities like that. But this has pretty much been, I don't have to constantly find those. I will also use, in the last episode I was in, I talked about algebra lab gear. I still use that to help them see both solving equations, but also building those, if you're multiplying binomials, being able to really see that rectangular solution in there. So I do supplement some, but really I've been counting on the curriculum that's there for me in a really nice, it's been very nice to be able to count on that and know that it's good and that it's working well for the kids.
Right. Yeah. So would you say that, I think I asked this and I was just trying to get at the heart here. The heart is the cost, or you just don't know that you can manipulate it. Like right now you can manipulate. So what makes you think you can't if you have to pay for it? And, or maybe it's just like, we can't afford it. So I need to move on. I just need to get over that. I have to move to something else. And I'm just not sure what to move to.
My plan was to, I'll have to look back at the price because I hadn't even considered getting the students digital access. As a teacher, I know I will have digital access to some things, but I don't know that I have everything. And if I'm going to manipulate it and print it out, why would I buy the workbooks for the kids? We just have a tiny, tiny budget at my school. So it's really figuring out the best bang for my buck and having that align with my philosophy about the best way to teach as well. I mean, I could go back to an old, I used to use the Prentice Hall Algebra 1 textbook. I could go back to that and manipulate that free, but I don't want to.
What's holding you back? And I'll give you my 2 cents on changing curriculums, because textbooks come and go, curriculums come and go. Somebody's going to have a new one someday. For me, in teaching my students, and this is maybe just the way I viewed structuring the course. And I always looked at every year, my course looked different from year to year. So when I taught the 9th grade, I taught 7th grade, even though it's like you have a list of resources to teach that grade, or you have a scope and sequence of these are the topics, these are the standards that I want to uncover. I was still always on the hunt for, I've got these kids in front of me and the lesson here is not going to go this year. It's going to be this one over here. So it's, for me, it was always like, what arsenal can I create or pull from that's great for this group this year? And it was never the same. I used to keep a running, I have a day by day that I would write in every single day, every single year. So I've got a spreadsheet that has like 10 years in a row on it. And if you look at the year to year, some things overlap because it's like, well, why would you recreate the wheel? Like you find a good activity. If it works, it works. But a lot of times, because it's a different group of students that those day to by days would shuffle, and also the activities would come and go, right? So it's like all of a sudden I have a different activity that slides in here because it replaces this one because I got better results and I wanted to see it. I ran that the previous year. It's like that group responded this way. I think this group is going to respond this way. Like for me, in the way I tried to structure that, that was the job. That is the job of trying to like read who's in my room, understand what they need, and then figure out what is the right resource that time. Why I'm giving you that 2 cents about where I used to think about is, to me, it didn't matter what textbook was in front of me. It was me about collecting different things and then having this arsenal. And sometimes it was, there is no resource here that's going to do a better job of me trying to interact with the kids this day on, you know, this topic, because this is exactly what I think they need on this day. So that's my, I guess it's not a hesitation. My thinking would be, if it costs money and we don't want to pay for it, we ditch it. And we go to like, oh my gosh, I don't have a resource anymore. Now I have to build everything from scratch. It can be building everything from scratch. What Kyle was kind of, I think, hinting at is like, you've got some stuff. You've got collections along the way. You've got your intuition. You've taught this course many, many times. So you won't be without. And it's, I think it's like trusting ourselves that we can do what's right for the kids in front of us. But I know it would be like, hey, this would be great if this thing was here in front of me because it does everything I want, which is important, right? Knowing what you want is really important because you can't make those decisions without knowing what you want. And it sounds like you know what you want. It's just saying, is knowing what I want and going, is this cost enough or too much? Or is it not worth it because it actually doesn't do all the things I want? And maybe I can be better over here. But we all have to make those types of decisions. But I think coming down to like knowing what you want, which sounds like you do, which is great. And then just being like, can I do this without it?
That's really great. I mean, you're making me hold the mirror up to myself a little bit and say, I do this in English class all the time. Exactly what you're describing of, okay, we're going to read something that's medieval. This group, is it Canterbury Tales or is it Sir Gawain and the Green Knight? Ooh, these guys are going to like Gawain. They're going to like that. I don't know why I don't feel confident enough to do that in math, but it does sound like a lot of work.
Well, and work it is, right. Work it would be, right? And this is work for sure. I think John at the beginning mentioned about the thinking piece, which is there will be that. And what I was going to ask, and I think you're kind of alluding to it, is the fact that you had said that you didn't actually say get trained to become a math teacher, right? And the reality is for a lot of people who were quote unquote trained, John and I were trained to be math teachers. I'm telling you that the training we received in mathematics education is not why we are doing what we're doing. We did a lot of self-training. We also had really good
unlearn.
Yeah. And in the province of Ontario, there was a lot of great learning for over a 10-year period around mathematics. So we benefited from that. We did deep dives on our own. And really what I think here, and John's saying it, and you're kind of recognizing some of this, is it really comes down to oftentimes when we think that this person or this group or that publisher releases a tool and you feel like you can trust it. And I think the part though that we don't want to rely on is we don't want to rely on it being, say, blind trust. I'm not suggesting you're using blind trust by any means, but the reality is that if I was to, let's say with the current curriculum you have, and you were to set some time, and you'd probably block this in, blocking it in your schedule, little chunks of time to go through little parts of this to really understand what about it do I like about it? And then how could I keep doing more of that? And kind of to John's point that I might be able to do this in different ways. So you use the example of like Y equals MX plus B, right? So it's like, what are they getting at in that lesson that other lessons I've used in the past are not getting? And you had mentioned a few things. You said context is one. So now I'm like, could I create a context? And it doesn't have to necessarily be. A lot of people think when John and I say anything, they're like, oh, I've got to make a video because John and Kyle like to do animations and videos. No, the context can be written context. It can be verbal. It can be anything. So you're like, okay, I've got context. What is it that they're doing to help? And you had mentioned this idea of holding off, right? Holding off, leading them down this path. How can I recreate that experience? And then I'll even be honest and say, you could probably go through that course. And if you were to think about maybe the first time through, you highlight, what are the really big ideas that I really want kids to take with them? And you started there and you went, hey, if it's 10 big ideas, maybe it's 20 big ideas, whatever that number is for you. I'm not going to say what the number is. And if you were to go through and go, what context did they use that helped to drive home that big idea? Could I either still use that context moving forward without this resource at all and still drive home that same point? Or could I create my own? Meaning, if I really understand, because at the end of the day, if a context helped my students to understand the math understanding that we're trying to reveal, then in a perfect world, that means I could probably apply it to another situation too, right? Because that's why we're learning this math. It's not only for the scenario involving the apples and the baskets and the, you know, whatever that context, it's like any context like that, any scenario involving the same big ideas that can reveal the same strategies and the same model could be leveraged here. So it's like, if I spent a little bit of time, you might actually shock and surprise yourself that you're like, huh, maybe I'm actually not needing to rely on this as much as I needed to. And that some of the things that I was leaning on, maybe I don't actually require from, say, this resource. So, for example, practice material might be sort of something you might be able to pull from elsewhere, right? So I'm wondering, like, when you hear me say that, one of the reasons why I think it's helpful to do this work is because sometimes we'll do something and we're like, we did it. It looks like it's working. But in reality, it's like, what part of it actually did work? We don't actually know. It could be one very specific thing that they do in every lesson. That's the secret sauce for your lesson. But we're thinking the entire curriculum's doing it, when it, maybe it is, but maybe it's not. And it's like, if we can kind of start narrowing down and sort of really going towards, what is it that I'm really liking about it? What is really mattering here? And then when you do that work, you'll not only know what it is you're liking and what's important, but then you'll actually start to realize that maybe I can even do that by finding the right tool, like John's saying, potentially even crafting something yourself.
It becomes a filter, right? If you go, these are my non-negotiables, you know, these are the things that I pulled from this particular curriculum that I liked, and my non-negotiables I can develop or use another resource. Like if you're pulling IM and going like, okay, I'm going to look at what IM says I should do today. And okay, my non-negotiables are these four things. And does it do it today? No. Okay. Does these three things well, but this one, I need to like make an adjustment. So I'm just going to roll with that. And it doesn't have to be every day.
And thinking why they did what they did when they did it. Did they do that on purpose? Or is that just sort of like the next thing that seemed logical, but maybe it doesn't matter. I don't know.
Does that make us suggesting this? Because I think what it sounds like we're suggesting is being okay with not having this particular resource, but pulling from other things. But I think the real takeaway that I think we're providing or hoping we're providing is the confidence to know what to look for and being able to go like, that's what I'm really after. And I can create that in a few different ways. And I've created it lots of different ways along the way. And I can use resources that are here to build what I need to build and not have to scrounge every single day, because there are lots of resources out there that can provide you that framework, but kind of filling in where you need to fill in is really important. How does that sound?
Hey, Math Moment Makers, Kyle here. And I've got just a quick message specifically for our district level mathematics decision makers out there. Do you feel like you're spinning your wheels when making district level goals for mathematics programming from kindergarten through grade 12? Setting new goals each year only to find little to no real shift in pedagogical practice or educator content knowledge across the district as a whole? Take a moment to book a short call with our team so we can learn more about your specific district and educator learning needs in mathematics so we can assist you in taking the first step of many in the right direction. Visit makemathmoments.com/district to book a web call with our team today. We have a limited number of spots for districts just like yours, so don't wait. Head to makemathmoments.com/district and grab a spot in our calendar now.
It sounds good. It sounds hard. I mean, it sounds worthwhile. I'll tell you that the thing that where my hesitation is at this moment is the one thing I find both from CMP, but then also, so we do Pam Harris's math strat chat each week. And there's so many things that are not the way that I would solve a problem. And so what I most and what I've really loved is introducing the kids to that and to go, oh my God, did you think of doing it that way? No, neither did I. And I, the other day, literally I celebrated, did a full on celebration because I did a way before I listened to the podcast and then Pam did it my way. And I was like, it's the first time ever that I did it the same way, that I thought of a way that she did it rather than
how did she get in my brain?
Yeah, right. Exactly. So, and that's what a little bit of one of the things that this curriculum does is it gives a problem and then they call it the initial challenge. And then it will show several different student solutions. And sometimes that's baffling to my kids. They'll look at it and be like, what is this person doing? But it's also so good for them to be like, what is this person doing? Oh, they did a ratio table, but they did an equation, but they did a graph, you know, all those things. And I am better at knowing all of those, but I also don't want to miss that stuff that I wouldn't think of. Because I probably say that at least once a week of, well, I would never have thought to do it this way, but look what this person did. So I don't want to limit my students in that way either.
At risk of potentially making you feel like it's more work, but I think it'll actually be less work, is if you are to look at that current curriculum and you were to, again, kind of zoom out a little bit and kind of look at it again and go like, okay, what are the themes I'm seeing that I'm liking, that I want to find in something else? Once I know what that is, once I can notice and name it a little better, then when I take a illustrative and I look at it, it doesn't mean you have to read every single lesson in illustrative, but you zoom out on illustrative a little bit and kind of look at, and then you look at a lesson, kind of look at what is the progression, how do they do that? And of course, there's going to be different, they might have a different approach to one of these types of warm-ups or minds on, as some call it, or for us, a spark, right? A lot of resources use a fairly similar flow, I'll argue. And then once you recognize those things that you're after, then it becomes a little easier for you to hone in on what matters to you to grab and use and insert where you want to use it. And it becomes a little easier for you to maybe leave the part that you're like, either I've already got that covered or it's not serving the purpose that I'm after. And it's almost like a little bit of a filtering. And if you keep it to sort of a good for now or not for now type idea, not saying you're throwing out an idea, but I like it now, don't necessarily like it or need it right now. It'll allow you to kind of more quickly filter, as John's using that term, through to figure out, what does this well? You might even find that as you zoom out and you look at different resources from a distance, you might think, holy smokes, I actually like the organization of this curriculum a little bit more. Not that I'm going to abandon the approach that I'm using with the one you're doing now, but you start to see what makes more sense to you and what doesn't. Otherwise, really what we're doing is we're sort of going, okay, I'm going with this curriculum. I'm just going to try it as is and like we'll see how it goes and hopefully it goes well. But it could be the opposite too, where it's like, maybe it's going to be the worst year of my life. Hopefully not, but you know what I mean, right? It could be anything. So as you start to kind of recognize those things and start to quickly identify, it's like anything in your brain, your quick thinking brain's going to start taking over and go, I recognize the pattern. I like that. I like this. Not so much that, not so much this. And it'll allow you to more quickly evaluate where do I want or what resources might be helpful for me as I do my planning. And you might even find that you might feel even more equipped by doing this process that you're like, you know what? Every now and again, I'm going to pull something from Illustrative. Every now and again, I'm going to go to Everyday Math. Every now and again, I'm going to go to the Make Math Moments problem-based full units that we have on our website. So really, I think the goal is, again, that intentionality, understanding what it is that you're after, and then kind of putting those pieces together. Because to date, it's so funny because John and I work with districts across North America and beyond. We help them with their district planning. And in many cases, these districts are going through curriculum reviews. And it's actually hard on us because it's like, we'll work with one district that's trying to ditch one curriculum to start this curriculum. And then we're with a different district that's doing the exact opposite. And then what we get to is the nuts and bolts of it all is like, why are we doing this in the first place? And in many cases, because they're like, we didn't like the one we had, or the scores didn't change, or a teacher complained, or these teachers complained about this, that, or the next thing. And then two states over, you've got a district that's doing the exact opposite change, right? So we really try to highlight that the resource itself, while can give you a great starting point, it's actually much less important than, say, which one is it and which one am I going all in on or some in on? And it's more about, again, recognizing and becoming more fluent with what am I after? What do I really want here? And you'll feel so much more empowered, I think, by engaging in some of that work.
Let me ask you one more question. What about in terms of parent response and the difference between I'm making up my own curriculum and I'm pulling from these places and you've got to trust my years of experience, and being able to say to them, we're using this, here's the name, here's the publisher in this case. It's from a university, they've been crafting it for 30 years. I have to admit, it's felt good to be able to say that, give them that name for the past couple of years.
Are you saying you felt confident that your choices to support their students has been validated because you didn't have to put it together? Someone else with authority put this together. Is that where your comfort has kind of been?
Yeah, the someone else with authority part. Absolutely.
Right. And you're worried about a parent who is questioning your choices at all of a sudden. That's what you're worried about?
Not super worried. I'm just acknowledging that part in my brain.
You're
that
like worried about it. You're like, it could happen. And what do I say?
Yeah, you feel like a little bit more secure that they might be thinking. And I want to go maybe a step further too and say, by no means are we maybe promoting, say, to a district or something to not have at least a resource as the starting point. So that's not what we're saying. So we would actually say it's probably not a good move if all the teachers out there just were randomly grabbing. Now, randomly is the key word, right? So having a starting point is always a good fit. But I guess what we're trying to, hopefully the big takeaway here is that regardless of what your starting point is, be it Illustrative, be it a different resource, again, Illustrative, put together and founded by an amazing mathematician, amazing educator, and is very well regarded. So that might be maybe your home base, your starting point. But I think as you're evaluating that home base or that starting point, you want to know kind of what it is you're looking for so that you can make that choice. And it sounds like in your district or in your school that maybe there isn't sort of like a home base, a resource as a starting point. And I would argue that everybody should have at least a starting point, and then you can use your professional judgment to enhance, right? Versus if it's just randomly mixing and matching, for the vast majority of people, that ends up being a big experiment, which we wouldn't necessarily advocate for, right? So it's like, but we also want to give you confidence that regardless of where you hang your hat in this next year, if it's Illustrative as a starting point, or if it's Desmos curriculum, which is a paid curriculum, unfortunately, then you at least know that that was put together very intentionally. And then we can still engage in this work where we go and seek out the resources that you need to attain what you're after.
And when a parent calls and is questioning what they're doing in a roundabout way, they're saying like, we're unsure of the choices you're making. And do you have the best interest in my kid's mind? And I think that's what usually happens when a parent calls, right? They're voicing really that concern. It's like, I'm very concerned that I'm not sure you have the best interest. So if you're just doing the random pull, then that is the concern. And that I would be concerned as a parent if there is no intentionality in the lesson choice of what I'm doing on that day. But if I have conviction that I'm choosing this lesson for these students on this day, because that's what they need, and this is the standard that we're covering, a parent will not, when you have that conversation and you can justify your choice, that parent's going to be like, that makes sense. They're looking to see where your confidence is. If I'm not confident of my choice, then I have to actually rethink my choice maybe. It's like, I should be confident in what choice I make. If a parent sees that confidence, they're like, she got this. There's no issue anymore. It's usually when there's like, I'm not sure. And the kid feels like everything's unsure. They go home, they tell mom and dad call. Like, this is where these things come from. Really, it's like this, like, not actually been intentional with what my lesson looks like today. But when we are intentional, we know what we're kind of working towards. These are the goals. Then you're not going to get any calls. How are we feeling? What do you feel like your next step is?
Hey there, Math Moment Makers. Are you a dedicated listener? Like, I'm talking, have you been listening for a couple months, maybe even a couple years? Well, if you haven't taken a moment to leave us a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform, it would mean so much to us. It'll take you under 1 minute so that you can help more educators see and experience the Making Math Moments That Matter podcast. Do us this huge solid. We thank you from the bottom of our hearts. And here is today's episode.
I think my next step is to start with the really big ideas, 10, 20, whatever it is, the really big ideas, and really map that out for myself. And then think about, especially while I still have access to all the different resources, what's worked in those and what I've liked about it and why I've liked.
I love that. That to me feels like a great first step. And then ultimately, even if, let's say you couldn't access, your husband says, you're not allowed anymore, honey, because of my job. You can't access. But you now have a clear plan. Like John's saying, there's an intentional plan of, this is what I really loved about the order of things, the way things happened in these lessons. And I've got a lot of these ideas ready to go. And I know that I can either replicate that same experience or a similar experience or maybe a better experience. And I might have some spots here where you're like, you know, this lesson here, I'm not sure what I'm going to do if I don't have access to the old tool. But that's when you can go, okay, now I'm going to intentionally search for that one so that it's not like an aimless pursuit every single night where you're going like, what's tomorrow's lesson? What's tomorrow's? It's sort of like, you're like, no. Got this. I've got a pretty solid plan and I've got a couple holes here that I want to fill. Might take me a little bit of time, but ultimately at the end, even in doing that work, I believe, and we've seen it happen, is that when you do that type of work, it's almost like the delivery of it also improves over time because you've thought about it so intentionally. And then you get to actually get rid of maybe some of the things I've been doing in the past that actually weren't that helpful. And I get to do more of the things that actually are helpful so that I can actually have more or greater, deeper impact on the students I'm working with.
Okay.
Well, what would you say is your big takeaway today?
Well, it was both validating and the flip side of that, but both good and bad to hear you guys talk about being always on the hunt. I mean, that's exactly how I feel. I feel like I've been on the hunt for the right curriculum, the right tasks, the right approach. I mean, I have completely changed the way I teach math in the last 10 years. And the hunt isn't over. And that's kind of bad news in some way. It'd be a lot easier.
I haven't got it figured out. It's not like, oh, that's done now. Lesson check. Course over. It's never, you know, within my 19 years, I taught as I said, they have the same courses every year. And it's, even though it's like, I think I remember thinking like my binder's complete once right. and going like, but then that means, I think we said this a long time ago, Kyla, we haven't said this in a while, but I mean, like, that's me thinking that for 10 years, I taught for 10 years, but really I taught the same year 10 times. And that's not great for my kids, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of like, what is the right move today for this group?
Yeah. It's so much more of an active thing than I think people realize it is, teaching.
Well, listen to this. It's like teaching can be super passive, but it doesn't mean it's teaching well.
No.
Right? If you want to be an effective teacher, if you want to have an impact, and it doesn't even guarantee, this is the crazy part. Nothing we do can guarantee learning, but if we want to have the greatest chance at having an impact with students, it is a very active process, meaning we're never done. Because let's be honest, the curriculum that now has gone from pilot that you like, that's going from pilot to a paid resource, why didn't it come out 50 years ago? If it was, it's because we're still working on it. And guess what? 20 years, that curriculum, it's going to take a lot of tweaks, right? So even though it's amazing today, the reality is that 10 years from now, it might not be thought of as amazing anymore. So I think taking that and making that intentional choice to continue the learning is going to pay dividends to you from how you feel as an educator, but then also for the students that you're working with.
Okay. Well, that's not what you guys were supposed to say, but
I know.
I appreciate
that.
We so appreciate you.
Yeah, thanks.
It's so awesome to spend another opportunity here having you back to chat. And of course, this goes to you, but also all the Math Moment Makers out there. Friends, no pebble is an old pebble or too stale of a pebble or a pebble that we think we've kicked out before, because the reality is there are no simple answers. And we'd love to chat with you again. And of course, anyone who's listening who wants to hop on and dig through with us.
We are going to check in with you and see what has happened since then. So stay tuned. We'll reach out within the year. We won't let it go like 6 years this time. So we'll reach out soon and we'll see what progress you've made or what new pebbles we can rattle around and kind of try to kick loose.
Nice. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks so much for talking with us today, and we'll be in touch.
Thank you. Thank you for your time, guys. I appreciate it.
All right. There you have it. There was that conversation with Ketrianne. And when I think about and reflect on the conversation, and I think about our classroom tree, when we think about the six areas of our classroom tree, I'm often reminded in this particular case of the leaves of the tree, which are our resources of the tree. We talked all about the curriculum here today and what we could be doing with our curriculum resources. How do we transform those curriculum resources? How do we make adjustments? How do we supplement? These are all pieces of the leaves of our classroom tree, and we want to strengthen that. Now, even though today we talked about kind of what we can do when that resource is pulled from us and how do we kind of adjust, I'm often also reflected on the trunk of our tree, which is our goals, our pillars of what we really want to see in our classrooms. Like, what are we really after? And today we talked a little bit about that with Ketrianne, about what is it that we are hoping to achieve in our classrooms. I like to call those the pillars of what we're doing in our math class. Are we here for resilience and teaching resilience? Are we here for thinking about how we're structuring our assessments and what that really means? Like, these pillars that what we really want our students to achieve in our room and get out of our experience in our room, they act as filters for any decisions that come our way. So when we set our pillars up, we set the things that we really care about, and we might pick three pillars, these guiding principles of what it means to be in our classroom. Then when we have a new resource sent to us, because that often happens the other way, is that, hey, maybe you didn't have a resource that was commonly used and now you do, and the district is saying, thou shalt use this new resource. When these things come into play, these new initiatives come down, you're asked to do this, you're asked to do that. Do these things help support your core pillars, what you believe in math class? Having those pillars makes it easier to make adjustments and makes it easier to keep focused on what's mattering. Because in this case, when we have to go search for a new resource or search for new lessons and make up the lessons that we need, that filter, those pillars help guide us. It makes it easier, makes it more comforting for us. I think it'll make the work less daunting and overwhelming when we have those pillars. So take some time. Think about what those pillars could be. Katrion reached out to us today, like she did in your previous episodes, when she went over to makemathmoments.com/mentor. If you go there, and there's a little form to fill out, and you can fill that form out and let us know your pebble. What's the pebble rattling around in your shoe? Katrion thought that her pebble wasn't going to be applicable to everyone. And it may not feel applicable to everyone, but I think when we reflect and go, are we all picking our pillars of mathematics? I think that part is common for all of us. And you might think that your pebble that's rattling around in your shoe might not fit the podcast, but we'll encourage you to get on over to makemathmoments.com/mentor. Put your pebble in there and we'll chat about your pebble here on the show. And it will help another person, just like Katrion's conversation helped you here today.
Well, until next time, my Math Moment Maker friends, I'm Kyle Pierce.
And I'm John Orr.
High fives for us.
And a high five for
you.
If you are a district leader of mathematics, a math coach, a math curriculum coordinator, a superintendent, and principal, getting teacher buy-in for effective math teaching practice is top of mind. And plans only go so far. You can make, you know, detailed plans and carefully designed goals with clear objectives and key results that are measurable. But that can feel like it all falls flat if we can't engage our teachers in the work. Working with teachers who do not want to change their teaching practices is one of the most frustrating and challenging parts of our job. How do I help teachers engage in effective teaching practices when they keep pushing us away? If you can't reach the tipping point in mass adoption of effective mathematics teaching strategies, then it's likely we won't see student improvement in mathematics. We have a free training an accompanying workbook for leaders of mathematics like you. The Make Math Moments team, myself, John, and Kyle walk you through our four-stage process we use with district partners to create clear, measurable, sustainable PD action plans, but more specifically on how to also get teacher buy-in so that it drives student engagement. So step one, register for this free training, get your planning workbook, and then watch the training. Schedule some time on your calendar so you can watch it and go through the workbook. After completing that workbook, you're going to have a clear, measurable vision, action plan for mathematics to get more teacher buy-in, but also be able to hit your goals for the 2024-2025 school year. So head on over to makemathmoments.com/4stages to start this free training.